Hello, and welcome to the College Crosscast, a lacrosse news, analysis, and commentary podcast. My name is Saif Bakadu, and I'm one of your hosts for the show today. On the other end is Jake Nazar. Jake, how you doing?
What's up? Masters weekend? What'd you say?
I said enjoying the Masters weekend.
I am. I've got it on the TV right now, and I'm in my chair with my laptop with me. So, yeah, we're going to talk about this and also keep an eye on the TV as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, blessed yesterday. I know it was supposed to be really rainy. I don't know how it was in Maryland, but it was really nice, actually. And today is actually a little crummy, but yeah, I'm like you inside, a little warm while watching some golf. Is you know, just a great weekend. And now, speaking of great weekend, those Wahoos from Charlottesville, they had a great weekend with a big win over the University of North Carolina. You know, the way game was quite impressive. You know, I thought UVA was, you know, had a good win against Notre Dame, but I was like, after that first game against North Carolina, the way North Carolina, you know, really overwhelmed them in the first half, like, I mean, thought maybe kind of a similar story here. But, you know, that second half of that first North Carolina UVA game was a little bit of a tell, or, you know, kind of repeated itself in this game in the second half. Especially in that fourth quarter, you know, when UVA got humming at the face-off and they were just able to just weather, you know, kind of a comeback by North Carolina to, you know, keep going up 11-1 in the fourth quarter and essentially kind of keeping North Carolina from getting the possessions to maybe cut that 3-goal deficit to, you know, maybe get it to overtime. But really impressive win by UVA. Matt Moore, big game for him. What was it? I think it was 4 assists.
Six assists, forgive me,
really, you know, outstanding game for him. Ian Laviano, again, just a big game, 4 goals, 2 assists. Jeff Connor, 4 goals, you know, just a big outing for him. And yeah, again, like, when Petey LaSala is cooking, like, he really was doing that second half, like, he's, you know, just very useful weapon in the Lars arsenal. We were 26 of 38 on the day for him. So, you know, I got to give credit for Cavs. You know, we'll get to the Notre Dame stuff later, but definitely, you know, now after going down 0-2 in the ACC, won 2 straight ACC games. This one, again, like, I'm not trying to make that big of a deal of it, but it was on the road. You know, we've seen, you know, the road games be problematic for a lot of teams, and this was, you know, good win for Lars and his boys, and, you know, kind of changes the dynamics of the ACC race. I know essentially everyone's just playing kind of for seeding for the NCAA. There's no real high stakes involved.
For seeding, they are putting together a extremely good profile.
Oh, yeah.
They're probably up ahead of Carolina now in the seeding order. They've beaten Carolina. They've beaten Notre Dame. And they've beaten Army.
Yeah.
So 3 Loyola as well. I don't know how much of a win that's worth, but they have it for whatever it is worth. But Army, Notre Dame, and North Carolina is, that's probably as good a 3 wins as anyone's got. And so if we see in the bracketologies this week that Virginia is the number 3 seed, or a top 3 seed anywhere from 1 to 3, I would not be surprised at all. They've put together a extremely good profile, and it's gonna, I think it's gonna feel weird because we saw them get dominated by Syracuse, we saw them to some degree get dominated by North Carolina, we saw them not look great, and there's still the open question on the defense of what they can be, or does this hinder their ceiling to some degree? I think that question is there. North Carolina had a North Carolina game on offense. They operated a 41% offensive efficiency. You know, they put the ball in the cage plenty. But Virginia has really changed their offense. And the beginning of the season for Virginia's offense was just ISO dodge, ISO dodge, ISO dodge, re-dodge, spin it around a little bit, ISO dodge, re-dodge. I mean, just, you know, they referred on the podcast as hero ball, and that's kind of, yeah, a simple way of putting it, is that it was just a lot of guys trying to dodge one-on-one, and it wasn't working. It was not successful. You saw that in the Cuse game, especially. I thought you saw it in the first half of the North Carolina game, the first one in Charlottesville. Just wasn't working. Now the ball moves a lot better. They're moving the ball much quicker. You're seeing a lot more cutting to the cage. So we're seeing a lot more assisted goals from maybe there were tons of great cuts, either, you know, adjacent from the wings into the middle of the field to, you know, right to the crease or, you know, kind of cuts from behind. Laviano had quite a few of those. And it looked like just a much more fluid offense. And that's what it should be, you know, like as you look at this team, I mean, they're not as good as they were in transition because there's no Ryan Conrad anymore, but there's still Matt Moore. There's still Lavion. There's Connor Schellenberger is going to have a monster career for Virginia. I mean, it's what those Virginia teams used to be, you know, in the late aughts with Starja, and it's where it's just like, oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. And there is just, yeah. You go down the line of, you know, great guys. Now they finally found some depth as well. Jeff Connor's starting and has 4 goals, but you got Garneau, who had 2 goals, running second midfield. Bertrand, who had a big start to the year, is now running second midfield. Xander Dixon had a goal. So they're finally getting some depth. That was another issue, was that it was just an extremely top-heavy, you know, group. And now they've got 9 guys with 10 or more points who play offense. P.D. LaSalle has 11 points. So that's, you know, pretty impressive in its own right. It looks like what a offense with this much talent should have when you've got Moore and Schellenberger and Cormier and Laviano, and then you got some guys from the midfield who can shoot the pill as well. Dox was quiet. I'm still wondering on Dox whether that big Notre Dame game where, you know, everyone said Dox was back. I wonder if that was the case. He's been quiet since then. 1 goal on 6 shots against Richmond, North Carolina. But if he is back, if, you know, if he has a big game, you know, on Thursday against Duke, well, then that also changes the outlook for this offense as well. So yeah, they look like a much better team. I think primarily because of how improved they've been on offense, really, is what I think. And people are going to look and go, well, they scored 20 against Towson, and they scored 20 against Air Force, and I know they were scoring a lot of goals. I know, but they're running true offense as opposed to a bunch of guys just trying to dodge and beat their guy. And I know we say that, you know, that's ultimately what offense kind of boils down to, is who can win a matchup. But you got to do the things to initiate that first. You can't just start out trying to dodge and beat your guy. You got to move the ball. You got to unsettle the defense, and then you can find the matchups you want and exploit them. And that's what they're doing much more than early in the year, where it was just, you know, I mean, they would have, like, that North Carolina game, that first one, I counted tons of times where I felt like a guy would have the ball on a stick for 10 seconds. Or 10, 15 seconds, just holding it. That didn't happen on Saturday. They moved that ball around really beautifully.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you love to see it. 13 assists on the day, obviously more 6 kind of slant that, but like it shows exactly what you're saying. They're moving the ball, sharing it, creating space, and then, you know, positive things happen. So, yeah, really, that hat tip to Virginia. I mean, again, I don't want to, like, totally jump off North Carolina bandwagon, because, like, I think of, like, some of those Maryland teams where, like, people are like, oh, third or fourth, maybe fifth in the country. And I'm like, they've only lost, like, 1-point games or overtime games. So, like, you know, North Carolina losing 1 game at Duke in overtime, you know, in the heartbreaking fashion. And, again, I'm not, you know me, I'm not trying to be all pissed off, but, like, having an 11-1 disadvantage in the fourth definitely aided, let's just put it that way, and Virginia. So, like, I still think Carolina's a pulling team, but even this, while I've been gushing about Gray, and rightfully so, it's a great player, love him, but you've noted that defense is not elite. And
no,
this is the kind of games where if you do get a team that is capable, like Virginia, and you know, there's a possession, but I'll just term it that way. I won't talk about face-off, but a possession advantage in favor. And you, as Breshy said in the post game, like, we played a lot of defense today and we weren't good. And that can happen. And hope, you know, if you're a Carolina fan, you don't want to see that in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, I don't think it's panic time, this is still like absolutely, as you said, lethal team. That's a great word to use. A team to be, you know, watch out for. But yeah, you know, they got caught and it could happen again. So hopefully they can just get it closer to that 25%, you know, 20% adjusted defensive efficiency to really be like a Final Four contender.
Yeah, they had a -8 possession disadvantage in this game. And when you, that's the thing is in these kind of, people often, you look at baseball mentioned as a, you look at a team who's a bad faceoff team, you know, where it's like, or a, not a great faceoff. Like I've seen it kind of used, kind of quite commonly mentioned for, you know, Maryland discussing the Terps, you know, and like what could plague them. And it's like, well, they don't have a great faceoff guy. True. But where it also can hurt you is in Carolina's case, where it's, and we've seen in these ACC games where the possession advantage has played a significant role. If you don't have a great defense and you get in this kind of game where the goals matter and you need to, where you need to keep your defense off the field, if you're losing these faceoffs and your defense is on the field a lot, well, that's going to hurt you. And we saw what happened. I was like, Carolina scored goals in the fourth quarter. They scored on 6 of their 8 possessions. Like they kept putting the ball in the cage, but they couldn't get the ball back. And while their defense was not bad in the fourth quarter, comparatively to the first and third quarter, the second quarter was the best defense they played the entire game by far. Virginia still scored 5 goals on 14 possessions. That's a 36% clip. Virginia was still, Carolina was not only losing the faceoffs, they weren't getting the stops. And that's where this defensive, you know, issue comes back to bite them. And I think the same holds true to some degree for Virginia as well. But in this game, Virginia just dominated the faceoffs. Pete LaSalle made sure it wasn't a factor. And Virginia's offense made sure it wasn't a factor as well by executing. If you are in, if you have a defense where you are, you know, having, being on the field is going to hurt you, well, then the face-off can come back to bite you just as much there, because if you start to, because how are you going to make the comeback when you can't trust yourself to get stops and you don't have the ball? That's an issue. And they, I thought they had to some degree figured some of it out against Duke. They had a great game plan in that one. They executed really well, but it came back to bite them again today. And they're 40th in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency. Virginia's 42nd, but they're behind Johns Hopkins. They're behind Sacred Heart, Bellarmine, Delaware. Some of these teams who are not defensive luminaries, you know. And that's, you know, it's, I've been wondering, you know, kind of how does this, how much does this matter? And I think today we saw it kind of matter, you know, and it doesn't have to cripple you necessarily. Yale's defense in 2019 was not good, and it wasn't good in the tournament either, but, and they still got to Memorial Day, but they had the best faceoff guy ever. And UNC, it does have a very good faceoff group of guys. They are 14th in the country in adjusted faceoff efficiency. That's really freaking good. However, here's some of the teams who you might have to meet in the tournament who are in the top 10. Lehigh, Virginia, Notre Dame, Denver, Duke. And that doesn't mean Carolina. Again, Carolina, get a couple more stops and you still maybe don't have a great defensive game and you win. The fact that their offense is able to operate at the clip they do and has as many options as they do, that they can put up 16 goals in a quiet Chris Gray game, is indicative of just how good, what their ceiling is. Their ceiling is still that they can win the national championship. But it, we saw that, yeah, you have to find something on defense. At some point in one of these games, you need a stretch where you can get the big stops and they just get them. And when you also lose the faceoffs the way they did, I mean, just pretty much all of them, well, there's how it comes back to bite you.
Yeah, absolutely. When it was like somewhat even, like, you know, that's when Carolina was had a run like that 9-7 advantage, and then UVA went on that run, and that's it's hard to come back that even when you're, as you noted, 43% adjusted offense, which is just quite insane. But not enough about Carolina, but we definitely talked about that topic a good amount. And one topic I was hoping to avoid, but we always talk about accountability. The Jays come up short against Ohio State. The Buckeyes went 14-12 in a kind of important matchup for Ohio State. They are now 4-4 in the Big Ten and overall, because they're only playing Big Ten teams. They have swept Hopkins. They got a little bullied around by Maryland a couple of weeks ago, and lost a nail biter to Rutgers. But this was kind of a good one, kind of puts them solidly in that top three spot for the Big Ten. And if there's a team that's going to be a legitimate bid stealer or one that could at least make it to the Big Ten championship game and maybe get a win against Rutgers, if they're both a 2 and 3 seed like Ohio State, it's certainly starting to put a resume together that to fit that role. Hopkins is kind of watching this game in and out while I was in Philly yesterday, but they had some points that I'm all hopeful for. Brendan Grimes having a hat trick, I love to see that. I really do. I think this Ohio State is an up and down team, but this is it's going to be kind of a tough game. They obviously walloped the Jays in the beginning of the season, but kind of I don't want to say yada yada, but Hopkins wasn't in the best position to start off the year. Brand new coach, didn't have a lot of preseason fall ball time. I think they only had a week to practice before the Ohio State game, but Ohio State had similar circumstances and they whooped them. This one was a little bit closer affair, but same end result. And I think it was a 3-1 and the fourth really kind of pushed Ohio State into command. I know, Jake, do you have any thoughts on the Jays? You are our, as I say, our Tim Gutterson to our Raylan. So I love it.
I thought they played really good offense. That's borne out in the stats. I thought they moved the ball so much better than they did against Michigan and Penn State, which was good to see. I thought Grimes had a hat trick and they didn't play in the second half at all. I don't think he had a shift. I don't know what happened there. I hope he got hurt let me rephrase that.
My heart stopped.
Let me rephrase that. I hope he's fine, but if he just got sat after having a hat trick on 3 shots in the first half, I don't know, man. I don't know what was going on there. So again, I don't hope he's injured, but him picking up something and then not being able to play is completely understandable. Him just not playing is not. So we'll see what happened. To me be shocking if he was just not on the field at all for whatever reason, because he played great and that's what they need. They need a guy like him to he's a future player for them, and I think he's got a bunch of potential, all the potential in the world. He can be one of those, they're not exactly the same kind of a player, but an O'Keefe kind of just pure outside, just elite outside shooter, and you find a, guy to feed it to him. And Joey Epstein's got 2 years of eligibility left after this. I think DeSimone has one as well.
He's going to look great in red, Did you catch that? Phenomenal in red. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a nice spot for him right in there when Jared Bernhardt leaves.
It's gonna be like that.
We're getting way too into the Fanlax weeds right now.
This is all blind speculation and just jokes, everybody. Categorically, just jokes. I always make jokes in stressful situations. So this is one of them.
I would gladly take him.
I'm just imagining the Roy Williams meme of like going into the locker room and like Bobby Benson is the one.
Oh, so Grimes had a great day.
You gotta laugh, folks. Sorry.
Grimes had a great day. Garrett Degnan's a great midfielder. He's the best offensive midi Hopkins has had in a long time. In terms of just his ability. One, his shooting ability, but he's really, I think, grown a lot in terms of ability to get his shot and get that separation and finish. He had a couple of nice goals. Cole Williams had a big day. He's obviously a guy who isn't going to be around for Hopkins next year, but it's you know, he's fighting and he's showing leadership that will help the program for the long haul. I thought they played really well on offense. The big problem for them is we thought they had solved their goalie problem and they just didn't. Josh Pearson, you know, who we thought was going to be a great player for them, you know, accountability once again, we were off, and I not going to, you know, bag on the kid or anything, but just hasn't done the job.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the job here was Ryan Darby has not been up to the standard of Johns Hopkins goalies. And he had some just bad games for them a year ago. And they went out there and got someone who they thought would give them an upgrade. And that upgrade has not presented itself. And that's the issue. Do they have issues on defense? Yeah, they don't have short stick D-midi depth. They're playing Evan Zinn, who, for the record, I think can be a really good short stick D-midi because of the athlete he is. But when you're playing a converted offensive midfielder as one of your short sticks, that kind of tells you all you need to know, you know, mid-season on the fly like that. But I think their poles have been better than I thought they'd be. So I think in the balance, I think defensively they have not been terrible. I think they've played decent team defense throughout the year. They just don't get saves. And so, but it's just hard to kind of figure out this team because there's just clearly so much mixing and matching going on. And they're clearly just trying so many different things. Some of it may be to get a feel for the Big Ten tournament because they know they're going to be there and they know that's their only hope at this point if they want to play in the NCAA tournament is to go on some kind of run there and maybe trying to find something. But largely, I think they're just trying to find stuff for next season. And that's just what makes them hard to feel like they're just a hard team to pin down because you don't quite know who's starting week to week. You know, there's going to be different guys in different spots. And so, yeah, like I thought they played well all in all. I thought they were just, you know, Ohio State just made a few more plays and looked like just the more, you know, mature, experienced team. And that's not a surprise. But so, yeah, I don't think this was a bad game from Hopkins, but they're a kind of relatively youngish team that's just throwing a lot of different guys out there in different spots and trying to see, you know, just figure some stuff out for the long haul. That's my take on the Jays. On Ohio State, God, I love Ryan Tarasenko so much. Just 3 goals, 8 ground balls, and a face-off win. Man, that dude is just phenomenal. He's just a phenomenal lacrosse player. And I'll say this right now. We did our, for the Inside Lacrosse released, you know, their midseason All-America. We submitted ours. I don't think we're going to tweet it because it just, I don't know. In a season like this, it felt weird to submit one, but we did. You'll get our full one, our All-America team for the 2021 season, you know, in probably a month. And we'll release that one. But if Ohio State plays, so it's got 2 more games left in the regular season and then a third Big Ten tournament. If they play like 4 or 5 more games and he's able to get like close to 10 games in a full season, he's a first-team All-American midfielder. He's not a short-stick defensive midfielder. He's a first-team All-American midfielder because this dude is... I mean, that Hopkins game, the first one, he had a goal, he had 6 ground balls, and he won 5 of 9 faceoffs. In the Rutgers game, he had a point, he had a ground ball. In the second Rutgers game where he came back in week 3, he had 4 ground balls and 2 caused turnovers, and they just look so much better as a team with him in there. And then against Hopkins, he had 3 goals, 8 ground balls, and won a faceoff. On the year, he's only played four games, so that's why we didn't, you know, put him as in that kind of, we didn't have him as a All-American in ours, because he only played four games. But he's able to get to 9 or 10 games. Like right now, in four games, he's got four goals, 19 ground balls, and 2 caused turnovers. He's the best defensive midfielder in the country when he's healthy, and, you know, just in terms of matching up with his man and winning his matchup. And then he's taking some faceoffs as well. It's just no one else in the country is doing that. And they are just, they are so much of a better team when he's out there. It's just, it's night and day. Their offense gets a guy who can shoot from the outside, and they get a guy who can, you know, pose challenges on the offensive side of the ball. So they become more balanced because they've got a great attack. Jack Myers has really come on. He had a great game against Rutgers last week. He was good today. You know what you're getting from Trey LeClaire. Jackson Reed's a good player as well. But they need him more from the midfield. And they don't have much depth, really, much at all. So they need him more from that midfield spot. Griffin Hughes has looked good. But after that, Grant Mitchell, Johnny Weissman, you know, they've been okay. But they needed more from the midfield. And now he gives them more from the midfield, and he can stay on for shifts. So that gives them some depth that you can move one of Grant Mitchell or Weissman to maybe run some more second midfield. You give yourself more depth. You give yourself more of a balance on the offensive side of the ball, and they look better on offense. And they are more comfortable on the defensive side because you have a guy who can take on a challenge in, you know, a tough defensive player. A tough offensive player for the other team and take him out of the game that normally most teams would probably have to put a pole on. So they're a totally different team. Are they good enough to get to the NCAA tournament? I don't know. They're really good on offense, I think, when he's, you know, with Myers playing like this and Reed had a big game. And I mean, Claire was quiet. He didn't shoot well, but you know, he's going to shoot well, down the stretch. Defensively, though, is just where I just come back to. Hopkins was 36.4% offensive efficiency. Some of that, yes, I think Hopkins played a lot better on offense than they have lately. But this has not been an Ohio State defense. It just isn't. They are, for the season, 52nd in defensive efficiency. You want to know, since we mentioned it, we'll look at what's the Tarasenko games versus what's the non-Tarasenko games. Tarasenko game, he got 20.5%, 42%, 25.9%, 37.9%. He had two really good games in there. That Rutgers game, especially last week, they played really good defense, and he was out there. So he does change a lot. Well, the non-Tarasenko games, 29% against Penn State, 33.5% against Michigan, not great, 39% against Maryland, 20.2% in Michigan the second time around. So, like, I think they're better with Tarasenko, but even when he was out there today, they had their third worst defensive game of the year. They're just not a good defensive team, and then they're going to need Inacio to, like, he's gonna have to win all the draws against Maryland and Rutgers. Now the thing is, he won three quarters of them against Maryland the first time and Rutgers the second time, but against Maryland the first time, they won 76%. They still lost by 8 goals. That was a bad offensive game they had, but hey, man, that's the challenge of playing Maryland. They play great defense too. So I think they're a much better team with Tarasenko on the field. I think they're the team to watch. If you're looking for a team, like you look at the at-large kind of pool right now and you look at it and it feels like it's all kind of sorting itself out. And it doesn't feel like there's a lot of changes there. If you're looking for a team who can change it, it's Ohio State. Because they're going to play Maryland next week. They're going to play Rutgers in the Big Ten Championship. And then if you win those two games, I mean, that changes the picture completely. But even if you get one and you get to that Big Ten Championship and you finish with positive side of the ledger winning record and you have some, you know, maybe you can go out there and blow out Penn State the second time around. Maybe you can get another, you know, blow out one of our Hopkins. You put some, you know, nice stat padding wins on that record. You move yourself into the conversation to some degree. But if this was a normal, regular Ohio State defense, I think they're an NCAA tournament team. But even with Tarasenko, I'm not sure it is. And that's why I feel reticent to ask to say that they can pull off some of these upsets and you know, get into the tournament. But with it, when he's out there, they're a different team, and now they're starting to pose the question. They could have beat Rutgers, got a good win, you know, over Hopkins here. They were in control of the game the entire way. And we'll see what happens next week against Maryland.
Absolutely.
Now, moving on, I just wanted to point out with our next game here in Army, nice bounce back win for them. You know, difficult loss to Lehigh the week prior, but if they continue on, you know, this way and become like the second team in the Patriot League, it's going to be a really interesting race the whole way. Like Loyola, you know, had a chance there for a little bit, but like Army beat the Hounds 12-7 in a kind of important Patriot League race, especially again the fact that I think Army plays BU, yes they do, BU next weekend at home. So that's going to be, you know, really kind of a going to be interesting matchup there, especially I think BU lost to Army by 2, was it, earlier in the season? Yeah, 12-10. So, you know, second round, hopefully for Terrier fans, at least they'll have a better outcome. I didn't want to delve too much into this because, you know, we've had our points about Loyola and their offense, but like I said, I just thought it was important that it wasn't a letdown, you know, nationally televised game, CBS. Shout out to one of the also networks printed on the CBS Sports Network. But like I said, just important for Army because, like, you know, why they always kind of have impressive runs in the Patriot League. You know, we always joke around, all they do is win. Sometimes they do have unexpected bumps in the road at the end of the second half of their Patriot League season, that where they, you know, suddenly what could have been like a 1 or 2 seed ends up being like, you know, a 3 or 4 seed in Patriot League tournament. But I don't know if you had a couple of thoughts before we move on, but like I said, I just wanted to just kind of highlight that game before we go on to our next ones.
I was hugely impressed by Army. Really, just Brendan Nichtern. I don't know if he just had a bad game, whether he was hurt, but Brendan Nichtern did nothing in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Double zeros and Army, no issue, no problem whatsoever. They finished with, on the day, a 37.5% offensive efficiency, one of their best games of the year, and their best player, who might be a first-team All-American, did nothing offensively. I was just hugely impressed by this performance by Army. Tons of other guys came out with big games. Aiden Burns, who's been their most consistent other Dodger after Nichtern, a guy you feel like, yeah, he can win a matchup for them. He had 4 goals. Danny Kielbasa, though, he had a couple dodges, scored some goals from the midfield, too. Bobby Absher had a nice goal. Gunnar Philp, they got 12 goals from their other 5 starters that weren't Nichtern. And Brendan Nichtern had double zeros, and Army was never under threat whatsoever of losing this game at all. We've mentioned Loyola's offense and the issues remain there. It is kind of what we've said. Joey Kamish got hurt, which is really unfortunate. He's had a tough year where he's just had injuries. I know we've got some, I mentioned on Twitter, we have some Loyola followers who kind of told us in the offseason they thought he was going to have a big year and he was going to really kind of change the outlook of that offense. I like him as a player. I do think he's a real promising talent for them. But he's had injuries all year. He came back, had a goal and assist, and then he got hurt again. Hopefully it's not long-term, but just been a tough year for him. And hopefully, you know, he can get healthy and then especially, you know, going into Patriot League tournament maybe, but next year, you know, kind of have that, fulfill maybe some of that promise that Loyola fans have for him. But, Army's defense did just dominated. Loyola just could not get anything. But again, offensively, they won the matchups with Loyola's priority number one was we're going to take Brendan Nichtern away and then force everyone else to beat us. And everyone else beat him.
Exactly. They found their way. Yeah.
And I was just hugely impressed by what I saw from Army. Their last two games, like Loyola and Lehigh, Loyola's not vintage Loyola defensively. They're good. They're not great. But Lehigh is really good defensively. Army's offense has looked really strong. Like, they were really good against Lehigh on the offensive side of the ball. They just didn't get the ball enough. But against here, they were really strong offensively again. They don't quite have the depth you normally expect from a service academy. Normally with the service academies, you always get, you know, a good amount of depth. They don't quite have that, I don't think, this year. But they've got the best top six I think an Army team's had in a long time. And that makes them a real interesting – if they can finish up business against BU and then at Navy – fans going to be there, you know, that's going to be its own challenge, as it always is. But then if they can keep taking care of business, yeah, man, they're going to be to borrow an old cliche, this is not your uncle or your dad's Army team, you know, in terms of offense. They've got a primo guy, Nick Turn, who is not going to have double bagel games, you know, routinely. But they got a primo guy in him who's going to be, you know, who can, you know, take his guy to the cage, and is again maybe a first team All-American. But they've got guys after that which they haven't always had, and so that's going to, I think that poses well for them. Yeah, if they get into the NCAA tournament, they're not going to be a team you want to see in round one.
No, definitely. And before we move on, I just want to share your point about like impressive bounce back. I mean, it wasn't as bad as the 23-4 disadvantage they hadn't faced off last week against Lehigh, but I think they were still down a little over 2-1 this week, and they still, you know, able to pull out a victory. You know, I'm just going to quickly go on to this before I'm going to clear out the lane and let you talk a little bit about that nice 16-goal run by Maryland. But Rutgers, just got to say, I'm really, you know, impressed by this offense. Like, it is something to see when it's really cooking. And like, it felt like every time I was watching that game on Big Ten Network, they're just, you know, scored a couple more goals, and you know, that first half, like, really just slammed Penn State at home. You know, this is kind of an important game. Thought maybe they're gonna make a little bit of a run, but yeah, Rutgers went up 12-3, in the first half en route to a 22-10 win. I mean, everybody was scoring in this one, just on goals. Kieran Mullins dropped 5, Shams. He also had 5. Connor Kearse had 4. But, you know, just some of the leaders there. Penn State, you know, we've kind of speaking of things that we've been talking about throughout the year, unfortunately for Penn State, it's just that offense is it's not the same flow or, you know, cohesiveness as they had in the past. You know, just that first half was kind of quiet. And, you know, while they're players, you know, TJ Malone finished with 4 points, and our boy Mark Sickler had 3 of his own. You know, aside from O'Keefe's 2 goals, I think him and TJ are the only ones who have multiple goals yesterday against Rutgers. So, yeah, not much to talk about. This is a blowout, and kind of, you know, extinguishes any chance of Penn State really becoming one of the top 4 teams, really. But yeah, like I said, good win for Rutgers. You know, shaping up before they played the Jays at home this week. So I don't know if you anything you want to share.
Penn State's really bad, and it's not a good look that they're really bad. You know, like I asked, you know, when I wrote that piece about Grant a year ago, and then we had him on the pod, talked about it. You know, I asked the question, what is Penn State lacrosse without Grant Amen? And if this is the first, I think they're 2-8 every year? No, I don't. I think they're going to be better next year, and I think they'll be fine long term. But the first, you know, answer to what is Penn State lacrosse without Grant Amen being this kind of year, it's not good. However, I don't think it can be over honest, and like I should have considered this some more, and I think we all should have. So like we were definitely wrong to rank them that high, obviously, but like, man, it is so hard to replace a guy like that. Like, it's just, look at Loyola without Pat this year. They're having tons of trouble scoring goals. Go way back. Look at Syracuse when Mikey Powell left. Like, the first, Syracuse had made 23 straight Final Fours or whatever. And then Mikey Powell graduated, and they lost in the first round. It was the first time they hadn't made a Final Four since, like, the 80s when Mikey Powell graduated.
Like, so someone's going to argue, because Albany after, you know, Miles left. So I was like, but they had T.D. Erlendoga his first year at Cotterfield throughout, like, the basic, yeah, like,
Well, and here, like, look, that's a fair counterpoint. But here's my response to that. Here's Albany in 2014, win the America East regular season and tournament titles, go to the quarterfinals, come within a goal of going to championship weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Albany in 2015. They won 16 games. They go to the quarterfinals. They had a fourth quarter lead against Notre Dame with a chance to go to championship weekend. That's the two Lyle years. Here's Albany in 2017. They go 15-3. They're a top five team all year long. They go to the quarterfinals. Here's Albany in 2018. They win 16 games. They go to the Final Four for the first time in school history. All right, here's the year I left out. It's the year after Lyle graduated. They do not win the America East tournament. It's the only time from 2013 to 2018 that they don't win it, and they lose in the first round. So that's still, what's the worst Albany year in a five-year stretch where they're a top 10 team every year? It's the year after Lyle graduates. Yeah, so exactly. Now, yes, did they handle it better than Loyola or Penn State's handling it? Certainly. But yeah, there's still a dip there too, you know? And it's like when you lose there are great players and there are tons of great attackmen right now. Like, there are so many of them. There are great players, and then there are just transcendent kind of guys, generational guys. Ament was that. He was a generational guy. And Pat was a generational guy. Mikey Powell, 15 years ago, whatever it may be, was a generational guy. Look at Cornell with Rob. Like, he got him to a Final Four in, like, 3 years after. They weren't even close to the NCAA tournament. And it took... What did it take to get back? It took another generational guy in Jeff Teat. You know, mm-hmm. You lose Rob Pinnell, Grant Amen, Pat Spencer. It's just different. Those guys are just, they're just different. And therefore the impact of losing them is just different. And so like, that's just something that I believe can't be overstated. And you see it to some, like Mac O'Keefe's a great player. Mac O'Keefe is going to finish up with the most goals in NCAA Division I men's history. Mac O'Keefe's a great player. And Penn State will not easily be able to replace Mac O'Keefe. Grant Amen's different than Mac O'Keefe. That's why Penn State with Grant Amen when Grant Amen was healthy, Penn State was number one in the country every single year. 2017, he was there as a freshman. They were number one in the country. They wound up losing in the first round. But at one point of the year in April, they were number one in the country. In 2019, when Grant Amen was there after missing the year, Penn State was number one in the country for like the entire year and made the Final Four. In 2020, when Grant Amen was there again, even though the season got cut short, Penn State was number one in the country. Penn State was number one in the country every year with Grant Amen. It's just that's the impact he had on that program was so immense that it was never going to be easy to replace him. Should they be better than 2-8? Without question. They should be way better. I'm sure Tams will tell you that. You know? Like, I don't think any of them are gonna be sitting here and telling you that like this is in any way remotely up to the standards that they have. I'm sure they will completely agree with me. So like they're bad and they should be a lot better. They're not 2-8 or 2-6, I guess, just because they don't have Grant Amen. That's not the only reason. But again, like I just don't think the effects of losing a guy like that are just so big. They're just huge, and I don't think it was fully quite appreciated how losing a guy like that. What effect that has, unless you got, again, though, like, as you kind of going back to it, it's like, unless you kind of have another guy somewhat approximating that, like, Albany had Connor Fields to at least, you know, mitigate that kind of damage, you know? If Maryland loses Jared Bernhardt but keeps Logan Wisnowskis, well, then they can mitigate that damage because they have a guy, if not that, but kind of approaching it, you know? But like, yeah, man, it's just you don't like look at in the inverse of it. Look at North Carolina, who was floundering around putting up 500 seasons, and then brings in Chris Gray, and they become a top five team in the country in a snap. drop of a hat. Like, that's the effect those kind of guys have. And so, like, it's like if he keeps, like, I just, again, they're not 2-6 and looking bad and losing by 12 goals to Rutgers just because there's no, you know, Grant. But it's like, you just cannot, it just can't be overstated, man. Like, you just cannot overstate losing a guy like that. It just truly really can't be. That's the effect he had, and it's going to play a big role. And they'll, again, like, they're gonna have to figure it out, and they are, you know, they've got some young guys, and their Sickler is a freshman. They lost Cole Willard for the year, so he's been hurt. Jack Trainer's been a good player for them. He's been hurt. Like, they've had a lot of mitigating factors, you know, but there's Sickler who's a freshman. Willard's, I think, a second-year guy who was a freshman last year. Matt Cosin played some. He's a freshman. They got some young guys. Jackson Reynolds, a sophomore. They got some young guys who will get better, I'm sure, and then we'll, you know, we'll see who they can bring in recruiting, maybe who can, a guy who can have a big impact. Maybe TJ Malone, who's not having a bad year. He's got 31 points in 8 games. Like, he's having a pretty darn good year, you know, all things considered. Maybe he can take another step next year and get better. But yeah, I just think it had to be mentioned. Like, I was just thinking about it the other day. I'm like, you look like Loyola's better than Penn State, don't get me wrong. But look at Loyola. Like, their troubles they're having scoring goals, you know? And then look at, well, yeah, man, how the heck do you replace Pat Spencer? Unless you just got another guy close to Pat Spencer, and they didn't. You know, on that roster to mitigate that kind of damage. On the Rutgers end, awesome win. It's been good to see them, just the business-like nature that they have. And a big difference. They always had great players, and I'm not to say that they didn't have leadership on that team before, but I think adding the two Kearse bros, they're both great players, but I think they're real leaders on that team. And I think they've given them and when you add Mullins and Charlambides as well, like, the age of that team is a funny, you know, kind of, you know, it's a good quirk, you know, like, the average age of the starting attack is like 25 years old, but mostly it's like, it legitimately, I think there is a professionalism about them that they haven't had, and they take care of business now in a way that they haven't quite before. And so that's, I think, what's to be commended about what they're doing. They're not letting up, you know. They've lost these 2 games to Maryland, but they're just not letting up anywhere else. And I expect that'll maintain until, and if they keep winning, they're going to be playing ball all night. And they'll certainly be fun to watch. The big thing, though, yeah, the Big Three had 3 big games, but man, the thing that will keep Rutgers from championship weekend is the depth. And they got goals from Bobby Russo, Ethan Rawl, Brennan Kamish, Ross Scott, Tommy Coyne, Eric Civetti, and Ryan Gallagher. That's 7 goals from guys who normally don't score goals for Rutgers. That's what they need. The mission for Rutgers, they play Hopkins and Michigan 2 games. They will absolutely be expected to win. And then their first game, if we figure the first game against the Big Ten tournament's Ohio State, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a challenge, and that's going to be a tough game. Their mission against Hopkins and Michigan the next 2 weeks is keep developing that depth. Just keep putting guys out there and letting them find a second midfield and find some guys for you who can get you goals when you're just, besides Charlambides, Kieran Mullins, and Connor Kearse. And then Shane Knobloch and David Sprock, too. Like, they've got those 3, and they've got Knobloch and Sprock, who are both awesome themselves. They also put up big-time numbers. You got those 5 guys, but you need a 6th guy, and then you need, as well, some guys behind it. It's not impossible to win a national championship without depth. Maryland did it in 2017, and Virginia did it in 2019, too. But there are a lot more teams this year with greater depth. So I think it's going to play a role, and that's the one thing Rutgers doesn't quite have. That, like, Rutgers is 3rd in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency. They score the living crap out of the ball. But what does Maryland have, and what does North Carolina have, the 2 teams ahead of them? They got more depth. And so that's the mission for Rutgers over these next 2 weeks, is find some guys beside your top 5 guys who are all awesome, the big three, but Knobloch and Sprock are both great players too. Find some guys aside from those who can get you, and if you do that, then Rutgers has a chance at playing on Memorial Day weekend.
Definitely. I'm going to clear out the lane here, but I'm going to at least set the table. That's a great mix of metaphors here. The Maryland Terrapins are now with their league. It was 18-12 victory over Michigan, have clinched at least a share of the Big Ten regular season title with two games to go, and are 8-0 for the first time since 2004. Now, to begin this game, Michigan, out of nowhere, jumps out to a 5-0 lead, and as a second time using this joke, but when I saw that, the Lawrence Fishburne, like, Black Twitter meme where he just kind of looks surprised in the distance, I definitely, like, took a double take at that score, but Maryland then proceeded to go on a, and sources have confirmed, a 16-0 run to just, you know, take complete control of the game. You know, essentially, Michigan got back on the scoreboard late in the third when it was 18-6, but you know, final score 18-12. So Wolverines did score five in the fourth quarter to you know, get into double digits. But you know, Jake, outstanding offensive explosion by the Terps. You know, just like I said, I'm just going to clear out the lane. Just let you do some cook. Let you cook.
Yeah, this is why I will not address the elephant in the room with Maryland. I might not address it all year. The elephant in the room of their record, why I'm not addressing it. Man, it is hard to bring your A game every week. It's not going to happen, you know? And this was not Maryland's A game by any stretch of the imagination. It certainly wasn't early. Give credit to Michigan. They came out and operated at a really high level on offense for the first quarter. And Maryland came out a little sluggish. And ultimately, though, I think this is good for Maryland. They need to get punched in the face a little bit, you know. Like Rutgers punched them back. Like Maryland punched Rutgers in the face. Like Maryland punches everyone in the face, and then Rutgers punched them back in the first game. But then in the fourth quarter, Maryland just punched them and kept punching. And then Rutgers kind of came at them, you know, in the second game in the first quarter and gave them a bit of a punch. But like three goals was the biggest deficit Maryland had faced all year, up until this game. They got punched in the face. And I think it was good for them to have that need of a response. And, well, 16-5, that's all you need to know. That's the response. But, yeah, I think it's good in the long run for them to have that, you know, kind of that just to be like, oh, wow, okay then, you know. Because, like, look, being down five goals, like, you can play great the rest of the half being down five goals and still, like, and only go into the half, you know, up by a goal or two. You know, they could have played great the rest of that way and still been in the game, you know, and they went into the half up four. And then, you know, they were up 11 by the end of the third quarter. But like that's when you dig yourself that kind of hole, you can still play great and then still, you know, be in a relative competitive game. Five goals is a good bit. And, you know, they wind up blowing it out. And again, Michigan's not like there were people who were like, is it really adversity they're facing Michigan? I'm like, man, if you're down five goals, you're down five goals. Like it's not like Michigan doesn't have some players, you know, like they got some good players, you know, they're not some atrocious team. You know, like some of these Big Ten teams, with the records, I'm like, if Michigan's 2-6 right now, you realize like a normal Big Ten season, that's like winning. It's like going 1-4 and Michigan's done that recently. And Michigan's won like seven or eight games a couple times in the last couple of years. So really, Michigan is probably the same team that's been, you know, the last couple of years we looked at Michigan like they should be better, but they're a decent team with some good players. Now, though, because the Big Ten teams are only playing each other, it's like you're 2-6. You must be atrocious. Like, well, no, not like completely. You know, like they're a decent team, I think, that, you know, would, if they play out of conference games, probably would have won, you know, most of them. So, yeah, but they're, the way they executed on offense, really, in that second, third quarter was just, like, nuts to watch. I don't think they missed a pass. But, yeah, they got punched a bit. They did not bring their best effort by any stretch, but that's not, it's not going, they're not, you're not going to. Like, teams are going to have bad games throughout the, you know, grind of a long season, especially this one. And they had one, and they responded, and Jared Bernhardt, is ahead of Chris Gray and Michael Sowers in points per game.
I was just going to say, speaking of Grant Ament, Jeff Bernhardt is starting to get into that Grant Ament territory. And I think it's his goal scoring. That's like he's just by himself. I just because of the Ringer did a rewatchables on it, but I've been thinking of the movie with Lethal Weapon. And that's what Jared Bernhardt is when he has the ball in his hand. He's living, breathing lethal weapon to your defense.
He is so, like, this is going like, to. All the best players recently, like Gray is a little different. Gray's kind of his own sort of unique, amazing player. Like Sowers is an amazing player. Ament's an amazing player. Spencer was different, I mean, in terms of his size, but kind of some like, and then Rob Pinnell was kind of in this mold. We've had a lot of like just really great passers and dudes who just know how to manipulate a defense and these kind of, you know, short, jitterbuggy, you know, great agility, you know, really good kind of speed in that kind of short space, you know, like these, and they just make their living just racking up assist after assist after assist. And those, and I love all those guys. I love Grant Ament. I love Michael Sowers. Love Pat Spencer. And the Pat was different because Pat was a big dude. You know, like those guys were awesome. But it's just so fun to watch a dude with Jared Bernhardt. Like, hey, man, I'm just going to take you to the cage and score on your head. Like, it's just, it's so fun to watch maybe the best player in the country. I mean, I think he's the best player in the country now. Just be this dude who's just, he's just going to score 6 goals. You know? Like, it's, like, that's the, like, it's not that, like, Ament produced tons of highlight reels. That's what made him so fun, was that his assists were highlight reels. And Sowers, you know, produced tons. And Jeff Teat did and all these guys. But, like, it's fun. Like, when they would put up those 8 points, it'd be like, yeah, I remember, like, 3 of them. Because, you know, the other 5, and they all matter, don't get me wrong, were, you know, finding a guy. Bernhardt's fun because it's like, I remember every point he has because he's just taking this dude on and beating him to the cage every time. Like, it's just awesome to watch the, you know, standout guy at the moment. And it can change. I mean, Gray's still kind of right there, you know, with him. Brendan Nickturn's also having an awesome year, as mentioned. But it's just fun to watch, like, the standout guy be this dude who is just... like, just this physical freak of nature who's just the best athlete out there, who just first step, impossible, size, impossible to deal with. Like, it's different. He's doing it differently than the best player in the country recently has normally done it. Like, Grant Ament led the country in points per game in 2019, and he did it with 95 assists out of his 125 points. In 2018, Michael Sowers did it, and he had 56 assists out of his 83 points. The guy Bernhardt is probably most, I guess, if a recent guy, maybe kind of like Ben Reeves, you know, that's kind of a closer approximation of kind of what Jared's doing. But 2017, again, Fields led the country more assists and goals. 2016, it was Malloy. God, he was fun to watch. He had more goals. So Malloy's kind of one of the guys you can go back to. But even he, you know, kind of close distribution. Like, Jared does his work because he just is you cannot cover him. Just not happening. And that's, it's fun to see it's always fun to see, it's fun to see different play styles among teams, and it's fun to see different styles among players as well. And his work in terms of the points he puts up and the impact he has on the game is that you just cannot stand in front of that guy. He's not the passer that, I mean, even though he's a very good passer, he's not the passer Sowers is, he's not even the passer I think a Gray is. But what is he is without question the best Dodger in the country. And he's just, you cannot stay in front of that dude. And that's what makes him, again, just so fun to watch. Is that dude just, I mean, it's gotten to the point, like, when he gets that ball and he turns around the corner, it's like, okay, this is over.
Mm.
Good effort here. You know, you tried, but this is over. And it is just awesome to watch because, you know, when he came back, well, I mean, I was super excited when he came back, but it was a feeling of, like, I mean, I mentioned it in week one or in our previous show. I'm like, there's something, there's more there. Like, there's another gear there, and I just really hope he hits it. And he's hit it, and it's just, it's fun to see a player put all that potential together. It's fun to see, you know, all of that come together in the way that it clearly has for him this year. And I'm glad that it's just in terms of his career, because he's always been talented. But throughout his entire career, as great as he's always been, there's always been that, man, but if he can just get that little bit more, if he can just get that little bit more. And he kept getting better. Like, he got better. Every year he got better. But every year there was also that, you know, and I don't think it was not because he didn't work hard, and not because, I mean, he works as hard as anyone. But I think it was very much having him be willing. It was about that kind of willing. Like, even when he was a freshman, when he was playing with Rambo and he was playing with Heacock and Connor Kelly and all those guys, it very much felt like he was, you know, these guys are the stars. I'm going to do my kind of thing here. And even the Maryland coaches are like, nah, man, you're just as good as these guys. You can do it, you know. And it was a push to get him to be more aggressive and to get him to kind of own that. And I think he's been a very unassuming, quiet superstar that he, you know, wants to include all of his other teammates and wants to play within the offense. And this year it's been like, okay, if that's CR, that's awesome. So we're going to adjust the offense to you. If you want to play within the offense, well, the offense is going to change to, let's get Jared more matchups. Let's get Jared the ball more in more spots where he can be the amazing talent that he is. I think some of that's maybe Bobby Benson's influence a bit, and Hopkins did a lot of that in terms of, you know, picks and big littles and things like that to get Bernhardt on matchups where he feels, you know, more comfortable. I think they've adjusted it, and I think he has been more aggressive too. Look, dude, there is no ceiling to you, you know, or to what you can be, and we're finally seeing that.
And, you know, I just want to shout out a couple other players, especially Luke Weirman. Big day for him on the faceoff, 15 of 25, essentially, you know, Shockey had five faceoffs, lost three of them, and then Weirman, like, pretty much was in there for the rest of the day, except for Connor Calderon, so just shout out to him. And also, Anthony DeMeo, 5 goals, which is a great effort by him, and just, you know.
It's been kind of feels like what Maryland's been holding back. I mean, they're amazing on offense, and Bubba Fairbairn has been quiet up until like the last 3 weeks. I don't know if you can get better from 40%. I guess you can get to Carolina at 42.4 offensive efficiency, but he's starting to look like himself again, and that's not what anyone wanted to see, because he's been very quiet on offense up until the last couple weeks, and now. He's the athleticism is still there in terms of his ability to beat his man, but the shooting is coming around too. He's 7 for his last 18 after being 3 for 23 to start the year and wasn't shooting grade 10 last year either. If he takes off too, and it's beginning to look like he's back to what, I mean, he was, you know, in 2019 when he was an all American type guy, it just became even harder to stop.
It's just like, you know, the hero, the action flick finds the rocker. Grenade launcher in the trunk of the car he was driving out. This is good to have all of a sudden. So,
you got one of these too?
It's like, you've been hiding this in the trunk the whole time? Why didn't you tell me? But great to see you. Well, obviously, love Bubba. You know, I want to acknowledge this because it was a good win by the Dragons, but didn't watch too much, so don't want to put you on the spot. But great win by Drexel yesterday, you know, over Delaware. Blue Hens have been definitely a fan favorite, or, you know, favorite of ours. You know, just seem to have a, you know, kind of terrible offense and stuff like that. But yeah, Drexel, the Dragons, not messing around. 112-9, you know, CAA, they're now 5-2. So it's going to be really interesting going in the stretch and CAA tournament, but yeah, at least wanted to shout them out. That was a nice victory on their part.
Yeah, they lost to UMass and Delaware by a combined 13 goals in the first two meetings, and have come back and beat them in the last two. It's Delaware's 4-1, Hofstra's 3-1, Drexel's 3-2, and UMass is 3-2. And UMass is beating Drexel, Drexel's beating UMass, Delaware's beating Drexel, Drexel's beating Delaware, UMass is beating Hofstra, Hofstra's beating UMass. That's so CAA's Thunderdome, man. It's that's part of the reason, like, with the CAA, whenever you talk about, like, could the CAA get two bids, it's like, just don't say it, because they're just gonna they're just going to cannibalize themselves. It's the way the Big Ten kind of is, like, in terms of, you know, or what we thought the Big Ten would be in terms of, like, all these teams beating each other. That's what the CAA always is. They have good teams, but the fourth or fifth team is always just laying there waiting to, you know, come up and bite them. Or in kind of in, you know, like Drexel's case, just now all of a sudden it's like, is Drexel the best team in the CAA? They might be.
I mean, they have, like, you know, decent resume. As you noted, you know, they lost to the Blue Hens by 3 and UMass by 5 in early mid-April, March, sorry.
They lost by 7 to Delaware and 6 to UMass.
Oh, sorry, I was 12-9, not 19-12.
Yeah,
they got spanked by the Blue Hens, forgive me. I'm sorry?
I said, and they've come back and they've won.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So yeah, they have a win over Towson. They played the Tigers again and Hofstra. And so the last three are Fairfield, Hofstra, and Towson in a row. Like, that's a winnable stretch. They've came back and covered their loss against their conference mates from earlier in the year. They could definitely go into the tournament with the one seed if they finish out, especially if they beat up Hofstra, but like they only have luckily or unluckily they only get to play them once this year. And Hofstra, they do have a win over UMass. The first game of UMass was postponed. So if the Dragons can beat the Pride, they're going to be on their way to maybe the number one seed in the conference.
Yeah, then if Hofstra beats Hofstra and Delaware play this, the thing is, it's whoever gets the one seed is going to want it because they'll be at home. That's what you want. But beyond that, I can't see Towson would have to win out. I think Towson's got Hofstra, UMass, Delaware, and Drexel. Towson, I think, would have to win out to make the CAA tournament. They're 1-3, and they're about 1.5 games behind, UMass and their and Drexel for the finals for the third and fourth spots in the CAA. So, it's probably going to be Delaware, Hofstra, Drexel, and UMass. Whoever's first is going to want that to host the thing at home. But otherwise, if you're 2, 3, or 4, who matters, It's going to be these four teams, and they're all kind of relatively evenly. Everyone's going to feel like they can beat the other. That's what makes it one of the more compelling conference tournaments and one of the more compelling conferences. Look at Towson is a 1-goal loss to Delaware, a 1-goal loss to Hofstra, and a 2-goal loss from Drexel from themselves being, in the conversation to make to be the top team in the CAA. They're not far off it themselves either. They're probably not going to make it, but Towson's lost so many close games this year. All Towson does is play close games, really. So that tells you all you need to know. It's Thunderdome. It's Wild Conference, and it's certainly fun. But there's no point in trying to predict what's going to happen there. It's just let it play out, and because you'll lose your mind trying to figure out how it plays out in the CAA.
Yeah, just ball out and let God sort it out. So. moving on to the biggest story of the weekend, Notre Dame, absolutely shocking for some people, but because we've been big Notre Dame fans for a long time, Jake. Notre Dame defeats Duke.
Some have said that Notre Dame is College Cross's favorite team. Cannot believe I just said that.
Jake, as College Cross is a fan of Notre Dame is canon. If you look at, historically, myself, always I don't want to say I'm the Regis Philbin of this, the staff here at College Cross, but I always love the Irish. I was so I don't know where this came from that we didn't, and as a matter of fact, that poll that was cited, by shout out to Notre Dame social media team, it showed the faith that our readers had because a majority said yes, that they would have more than 2.5 wins.
Yeah, outside. Absolutely.
So shout out to both the Cavs and the Irish. And Jake, myself, I'm a humble man. I'm a Christian, you know. So I was going to let this slander go by, but you know, I just got to say, you know, once they said that we weren't a fan of the Irish and like we were short Kenya, I have to, you know, the best thing about me in the media when you can be technically right, I was like, we did predict, and I used a royal we, that the Irish would be the dark horse in our preseason pick. Notre Dame is definitely my dark horse. So I am clinging to that, and that's going to be my legal justification that I might like to stand on this one. So we love Notre Dame, always have loved Notre Dame. And just the idea of being Corrigan's bulletin board material for his boys, and you do love to see it. So, but quickly, jokes aside, we'll go back to jokes shortly. But shout out to Notre Dame, especially Coach Corrigan. His 311th win at Notre Dame, making him the winningest coach at the program in D1 history. So making him the winningest head coach at a single program in NCAA D1 history. That's a phenomenal achievement, especially when you think of the legends who've coached in this game, throughout the various like Titan teams. So Notre Dame has one of their own, you know, obviously hasn't gotten to the championship, didn't bring home a championship to South Bend, but multiple Final Fours, national championship appearance, just leaves a really good team. And right now, maybe as we, you know, people may have not seen our statement, Jake, that we released on Saturday, that we did actually think Notre Dame would end up being the ACC favorite to win the regular season. So again, just really happy to see Notre Dame, showing everybody what we saw early on. I don't know if you had some quick thoughts or long thoughts. We love talking about the Irish anytime we can. So I don't want to hog the mic.
No, I thought the main thought I had, and I mentioned this on Twitter, and some people were, you know, like, you're not giving enough credit to Notre Dame. No, the whole point of it was giving credit to Notre Dame, you know, like their game plan was. And we got some feedback as well from, I think, Roger Reynolds on Twitter, who made a good point that Duke had, to some degree, this is some of, you know, what Duke plays into this a bit in terms of their strategy, but Notre Dame knew it, and their game plan on defense was terrific, and they executed it flawlessly. Notre Dame and Duke, to some degree, because of the way they dodged from the, Roger's around the point was, you know, the way Duke dodges from the midfield, they dodge, they re-dodge, they really kind of, everything kind of filters towards the middle. And, but what Notre Dame did, and defensively so well, was they clogged the middle of the field. Because when Michael Sowers dodges from X and he comes up and he looks to kind of curl, he's never gonna curl and then turn topside and try and shoot or dodge. Sowers, if he's gonna dodge on you, he's gonna do it really, like, really right next to the crease. You know, he's going to try and get a little separation and then a kind of inside roll inside, or get a little step on the intern, really just really tight in within the crease. If when Sowers gets to the kind of the wing, from he gets the goal line set and comes from the wing, what he is almost exclusively looking to do, and it's this is the difference between him and Chris Gray. Like Chris Gray, you'll see it all the time. He'll come up from GLE and he'll kind of curl towards the wing and he'll freaking just rip a shot because he's got a great shot. And a rip and score. Bernhardt will, he's not the same shooter as Gray, but Bernhardt's willing to shoot, or Bernhardt is willing to, he'll either roll back or he'll take an extra step and get by you and get to the cage. Bernhardt's willing as well to dodge from there, from that position. When Sowers comes up, he's looking to pass. He is looking to find, he's looking to find a guy on the crease. He's looking to find a guy inside. Maybe he'll find a skip pass, and he's an amazing passer, and it's worked for him his entire career. Sowers, that's what he's looking for. He is going to curl up, and because everyone pays attention to him, because everyone has eyes on him, he's looking to pass. So what you got to do is you got to have a guy. How do you stop him? You need a guy who can stick to Sowers. Well, Jack Keelty stuck to Michael Sowers, but glue. I mean, he was just stuck to him. Right to him. Jack Keelty played a phenomenal game. Absolutely terrific. You need a guy, because if, like, the Syracuse game is a good example, I think Mitch Wyckoff's a fine player, but he could not stick with Sowers. And so Sowers was able to just do whatever he wanted, because he knew he could get that separation, so then he could dodge and score some goals, and then they had to account for Sowers as a dodger, and so therefore then he could pass, and he dominated. But if you get someone who can stick to him, because he is so quick laterally in those kind of short spaces. If you get someone who can stick to him, and Kielty stuck to him, and he never got, you know, he never let Sauer's, you know, kind of quick shiftiness and agility, you know, kind of phase or rattle him. If you get someone who can, if you get someone who can stick to him, then what you do is you force him, you clog the middle of the field. You just, you throw bodies in there. And you, and those passing lanes, you essentially evaporate them. Just get rid of the passing lanes. And you saw, how, I don't know how many times you saw Sauer's, because he's looking to pass, pass got tipped, knocked down, you know, broken up, pass picked off, going the other way. That's what Notre Dame did so well. They just clogged the middle of the field and clogged all the passing lanes. And so the only option for Sauer's was like, dude, you gotta dodge. And it's not his game. That's just not what he is trying to do. And even if he did, the way Kielty played, who knows if he'd have been successful. But that's what you gotta do. And he just wasn't doing it. And so therefore Notre Dame was able to just, you know, sit there and be like, well, you gonna dodge? You know, like, are you, what's she gonna do here? You gotta, you know, like, we're not giving you anything in the middle of the field. We're giving you nothing. And we got a guy who's going to stick to Mike at GLE and around the cage, where even if he gets him hung up, Kielty's going to stick with him. We feel comfortable in our guy. We're not going to really, you know, overextend and slide super early. What's your answer? Duke didn't have an answer. And I also think, you know, in some ways, Duke's has a lot of really other good players in offense. O'Neal has shown a bunch of ability, and he's been great. Nakai Montgomery is a really good player, and you know maybe first team All American type caliber. We've loved on Joe Robertson last week, and he's been great. I think all those guys are very good players. I'm not sure any of them are dodge against one of the best defenses in the country and win those kind of matchups players. You know, like, I'm just not sure they are. Like, Nakai is a great midfielder, but athletically, I think he's, not that he's not unathletic at all. I think he's got great speed, but I don't think his speed is as big a, I don't think his speed is as important of impact on the game as like Tanner Cook's size is. You know, like when Cook for Carolina, like that dude, his size, he can bully you and get past you. And then he can use his size so well inside to dodge, that like in a tough matchup, I think his size and athleticism maybe plays a bigger role than Nakai's. Nakai is he's a super smart player, great shooter. And again, he has great speed, but I don't know that he doesn't use it. When he was younger, he went to that a lot. And when he broke out in terms of championship weekend, that's, you know, what he kind of showed out. But as he's kind of developed as a player, he's a great shooter, and then he's a really good passer, and he's a really willing passer. But as you've seen in ACC play, as the schedule's kind of toughened up, Nakai's got one goal in his last five games. Now he has 12 assists in that time frame. He's a willing passer and he's a good passer, but you haven't seen the goals come. You haven't really seen the shots come either. He had two shots in this game, even though he had four assists. He had two shots against Carolina, four shots against Q, scored on one. And then their last two games before that were against High Point and Jacksonville. He had two shots apiece. Some of that's because Duke plays a lot of guys, but he's not that kind of, I think if you give him a favorable matchup, he's going to completely exploit it. If you give him a good matchup, I think he can exploit it. But when you put him on some of these Notre Dame polls, you know, and the game they played, those Notre Dame polls were terrific. And so when you put him on those guys, I don't know if he's, you know, going to make that same level of impact. O'Neal's the same way. O'Neal, by the end of his career, there won't be a matchup that scares him in the country. But he's still young. He's still getting used to, you know, playing at this level. And this is the best defense they've played all year. The guys Notre Dame threw at him were the best guys Duke has seen all year. Same for, you know, all of them. And I think that was kind of the difference. It was, if we're going to clog the passing lanes and Mike isn't going to, you know, kind of win that matchup, well, then someone else is going to have to dodge from and win their matchup and earn that kind of respect from us. And couldn't do it. And so a fantastic defensive game plan for Notre Dame that was executed to perfection, and they deserve all the credit in the world. Their ride was also terrific. They forced Notre Dame did not win the faceoffs in this game, but the possession battle wound up being even because Notre Dame forced a bunch of failed clears from Duke and a bunch of turnovers. So they played a fantastic game. Even without their usual faceoff advantage, they still wound up getting this thing to a level at possessions, and then their defensive game plan was just flawless. But for Duke, yeah, that's, I think, like, my point was not that Notre Dame wasn't playing great. It was that I think it was the same thing you saw against Carolina for Duke, I think, to some degree as well, was that Carolina did the same thing. Cam Macri stuck to Sowers, and then they had put all these their other polls, and they're like, we don't know if Duke's other guys can beat us. And it's not that they're all, it's not that, you know, like we've talked about this to some degree, kind of Notre Dame's guys and then Loyola's, like, can you win matchups? Duke's guys can win matchups, but it's harder to win matchups when you're facing other guys who are as good as you, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, we're going to force you to win matchups against guys who are as good as you. And so far, at least in these Carolina game and against the Notre Dame game, Duke's other Montgomery, O'Neal, these guys, Joe Robertson did against North Carolina, and that's why Duke won that game. But it's been, all right, we know you can win these, but can you win them against guys who we think were as good as you? And I haven't seen that from Duke in his last two games, and I think that's so far the real chink in the armor for Duke. That's the real, because that's two games in a row now in ACC play where they've been below 30% offensive efficiency. And so that's what made it interesting to me was it was a similar game plan, and Notre Dame executed it even better probably than Carolina did, even though Carolina did it really well. But that's where it looking at it was like, huh, this looks kind of similar, and it's Duke didn't have an answer for it.
I think what you just said about the, you know, caliber of players, so right, because, like, well, when Mike was at Princeton, like, you know, backing off and making other players beat us, quote unquote, you know, Notre Dame wasn't the first defense to try that, you know, and those were the games when Mike would have like four goals or three goals, you know, en route to like a 8 or 9 point day, you know, 2020, just had such a phenomenal start. But now, you know, ACC, you know, defenses, like, you know, they're, you know, inch 2 inches taller, 15, 20, 25 pounds heavier, you know, and it's just like week in, week out, you know, just had like this, you know, great defensive effort by North Carolina. Now you come up against Corrigan and, you know, with a different strategy, they saw what may have worked. You know, I mean, I don't know if you want to define them shutting down Carolina, shutting down Sowers. You know, he only finished with 1 point last game, and he only finished with 1 point this game, you know, with one assist. So maybe something, you know, Corrigan saw the North Carolina game that he tried to replicate with his own, you know, unique blend. But yeah, this is, as you know, two games in a row where kind of quiet for Sowers. Not that Gray blew up for seven, as he's, you know, as we joke, like he's good for it. But yeah, you know, week in and week out, ACC defense is just different. I'm not, no disrespect to the Patriot League or the Ivy League, you know, I mean, and to whoever they played in North, you know, out of conferences, games, like, you know, playing Carolina, Virginia, Syracuse, Duke, the week in and week out is going to be, you know, hard, you know, to keep up that pace of, like, you know, 5-6 points a game. So, yeah. But as we've always said, you know, the Fighting and Irish are one of the best teams in the country, and we're happy to see that they're up there. And speaking of up there, Jake, let's have a conversation, to paraphrase Mr. Barkley. Who's the number one team in the nation? I mean, yeah, call us Big Ten homers for what you will, but, like, our Maryland pick still looks pretty good. You know, undefeated team just clinched a chair in the Big Ten regular season. First time 8-0 since 2004. I mean, I guess that's pretty good, you know. Number, I think they did drop a little bit of adjusted defensive efficiency because, yes, you know, Michigan did light them up a little bit.
They're still the only team in the top three of both.
Oh, for both, right? Exactly. That's what I was going to get.
In the top three for both, and I believe the only team in the top five as well, for both adjusted offensive and adjusted defensive efficiency. No, I think, one, like, I think the question, like, who's the best team in the ACC is going around. And I get it as a conjecture point, but I'm also like, does it, like, dudes, it doesn't matter. Like, they're not playing for anything. I don't want to do this, but like, it just kills me. Like, I can't get it out of my head when I'm watching these ACC games. I'm like, are they playing for anything? And I'm like, you're not playing a conference tournament. Like, even the RPI booster, like, man, at least you're playing for something here, you know? And it's like, I can't get that out of my head when I'm watching some of these games. As fun as, like, some of these games really are, it's like, gosh, man, like, who's the best team in the ACC? I genuinely do not know. And I'm also like, I don't know that it really, you know, matters, because they're all probably going to make the tournament. And, you know, then we're just discussing, yeah, who's the best team in the country? I think Maryland's the best team in the country. Like, it feels like there are some, you know, it's like where we're like, there are some people in our mentions who are like, yeah, College Cross can be really happy about this. I'm like, man, I don't care. Like,
we were voting Maryland number one before it was cool. Like, if you're not like two or three weeks, I love Maryland. People were saying last week, Maryland vaulting Duke after Duke beat North Carolina. I was like, vaulting?
No.
The tournament number one since last week. What are you talking about? At least around here.
But also, it's like, I can go back to, here was the College Cross preseason top 20. The number one team was Duke. After week one, the number one team was North Carolina. After week two, it was North Carolina. Week three, North Carolina. Who was second? Duke. Week four, 1-2, North Carolina and Duke. Week five, North Carolina and Duke were 1-2. Week six, North Carolina was still number one. After week six, yeah, we put Maryland got to number one by Maryland had two first place votes, North Carolina had two first place votes, and Duke was third. And then week seven, Maryland was one, Duke was two, and they still had two first place votes. And then last week, again, Maryland won. So, like, we had Duke or North Carolina number one for the first 5 weeks of the row, and in the preseason, too. Like, we've given Duke and North Carolina a ton of love. And our poll for this week is, I can tell you, yes, Maryland will be number one, but Adam has Virginia ranked second, Safe has Notre Dame ranked second, Chris has Virginia ranked.
Just call me Regis Philbin for the rest of the year, Jake. Go Irish.
I have Notre Dame ranked third. Adam's got Virginia ranked third. Chris has Notre Dame ranked third. I've got Virginia fourth. Adam's got Virginia. We've got, among our top fives, Adam has two ACC teams. I've got three ACC teams. Ryan's got three ACC teams. Safe's got two ACC teams, and Chris has three ACC teams as well. So, like, man, there are a lot of, there's plenty of ACC love here. And so, like, as well, like, it's, you know, do I think Maryland's the best team in the country? Yes. I think Maryland is the best team in the country. Why do I think they're the best team in the country? Well, when I watch them, I've seen that they're blowing these teams out weekly. And then, yes, I look at the analytics, and it says that Maryland's second in adjusted offensive efficiency. Before this week, they were first in adjusted defense. Now they're third. They're the only team in the top five of both. That's why I think Maryland's the number one team in the country. Does that mean they are? I do not know. They might not be. You know, we'll find out.
We'll play a little game here, Jake. You know, we use, you know, science and numbers for our justification that Maryland is number one. But, you know, we'll have a little fun here. You know, of course, you're my boy, but I'll treat you as a hostile witness. I'll be the devil's advocate, right? So, first point, what do we know about the Big Ten schedule? Like, Maryland hasn't played any other conference games, so it's difficult to know they're the best team. How would you counter that?
That's completely fair. I think if you want to look at this as, if you want to rank number one, and I said this last week, if you want to rank your poll on who has the best wins, the best team in the country is probably Duke or Virginia. Duke has wins over Denver. They also have a win over Syracuse, and they have a win over North Carolina. Virginia has wins over Army. They have a win over Notre Dame, and they have a win over North Carolina. If you want to rank your poll straight up on who has the most wins, or sorry, who has the best wins, just purely who's got the best, who's played the toughest schedule, who's got the best wins. If that's how you want to rank your poll, I would say rank Duke or Virginia number one. And that's fine. That's fair. I would not have an issue with that. If that's how you want to rank it, that's fair enough. I think that's completely fair. So if you just look at Maryland's and it's like Maryland's got two, we'll say, if we'll use the media poll as our kind of arbiter here, Maryland has two top 10 wins. They've beaten Rutgers twice. So I yes, it's only one team, but to me, that's two wins. They beat Rutgers twice. That's two top 10 wins. Duke's got three. Virginia's got three. They're also over three teams compared to one for Maryland. If you want to rank just based off that, that's completely fair. That is fine. So to answer that question, that is a fair point. And if you want to rank your poll off who's got just the best, the most top 10 wins, well, then our Virginia, according to the media poll, Army will move back into the top 10, I imagine, after this week. So we'll say Army does. Virginia's got three, and Duke also has three. Duke's beaten number three, number five, number nine. Virginia's beaten number this past week, number three, this past week, number four, and number 10, as Georgetown and Army were tied in the media poll. They were each had 249 points. They were tied for 10th. If you want to rank based off that, and that's a perfectly valid way of doing it, that's not how I do it, but if that's I don't think that's how we most of us do it. If you would just want to rank it off that, then yeah, I would say rank Duke or Virginia number one.
I think that's fair. You know, the star points, like, it's a power ranking is like not as, or you know, what you think of the top 20 teams at that moment, you know, doesn't encompass every factor that would argue with. But like, you know, but you're right. It's like kind of, you can make a great case for a lot of teams. Like, you use excellent point. Like, so, quietly, Virginia has one of the toughest resumes on the, you know, all of D1. You know, that Army win, that Tinder date of lacrosse matchup is helping them, you know, just all over the place, you know, with an extra top 10 victory. And, you know, coincidentally, is the team that did also whoop Syracuse, it's all gonna kind of even out. But like, I guess I would go with Maryland, like, you know, seeing them live, just seem like a complete team. I can hear some of the other points, but Duke lost this weekend. It's tough, like, you know, like, to argue the Terps, especially this man, like, you know, sorry we were right for like 3 weeks in a row. Maryland was the best team, but like, yeah, jokes aside, but the Terps are just like the, like, take away the analytics, you know, just like, this is the year of the eye test. Like, when I see them playing and seeing them live, like, it was just, this team is faster, they're composed, they take advantage when they see it, to push it in transition. They got an absolute, you know, this we're gonna make this catch on lethal weapon in Jared Bernhard, and absolute animal, and Logan right there, you know, 1A, 1B, like, they just have all the tools, and that defense is just so much better than it has been in years prior. And I say that relative, you know, like, this is Tillman. They've done nothing but go to the Final Four except for, you know, the year that just atrocity of a bad call that prevented them from going to the Final Four again. Like, you know, like, just think, I was like, yeah, those were the bad defenses, you know? Yeah, they only made Final Fours and national title games. So, I put bad in quotes. So, yeah.
They've had, like, the only time they got to a Final Four where they not great defense was 2018. Like, the 2017 defense was freaking awesome. Yeah. However, is this defense better in, let me pull up their Lax Reference Pro page, which you all should subscribe to if you are not subscribed already. Let me pull up Maryland's Lax Reference Pro page and just look at their 21% adjusted defensive efficiency this year is 4% better than in 2017, which is quite a bit, but 2017 was one of the best in the country. It is 4% better than 2016, when it was also hovered around 25%, they were one of the best teams in the country. And then they go far as back as 2015, the 2015 defense, which was phenomenal. That was a Maryland team that did not play great offense, really at all, but they had a just dominant defense. That defense was at 22.9%. So, yes, in at least defensive efficiency, they are better than all of those defenses. Now, they are
25% better for the last 3 years, right?
They are significantly better than the last three. The last 3 years, they were at 28%. They were not great. 2018, they had no short stick D middies, and they got in the Final Four, Duke just ran by them all day. 2019, they had no long, they didn't have long stick mini dips. The short sticks improved, but the long poles were not as good. That meant Virginia really got to him on faceoffs late in that game. They got to him in the middle of the field. Virginia was able to, that's how Virginia made that comeback, albeit that didn't happen and was a usurping. But that's where they were hurt. And then last year, they were not great on defense either, at least in that short, kind of small time span. They're 7% better this year, significantly so. On the defensive side of the ball. So yeah, like I think it, like
25%, right?
They are
so they're like 7 percentage points, but like from 28 to 21%. Yeah, that's like
28 to 21%. Yeah, the 2017 defense. I think if you had Maryland playing some of these ACC teams, I think they'd probably be closer to 23, 24-ish maybe. So I think they're kind of in line with that 2017 defense. That defense won a national championship, but they are way. This is the best defense they've had since then in 4 years. Definitely.
And paradoxically, like that face-off is probably the worst of the last. I mean, the worst prior was just 55.2. Yeah, and they're, you know, seems to, you know, I was just kind of really impressed. Like, I mean, we don't want to talk about our midseason too much, but, you know, just defensively, speaking of Maryland, Makar and Grill were our first teamers. I think, you know, they're just. Well, it's just been a potent combination this year, and you know, that's why Maryland's going to be my number one team this week. But shout out to the Irish, you know, the team that we love. Jake, they're going to be close number two. So, you know, this was a masterclass in spin. You know, the best thing, you know, shout out to the tweet. As I joked around with Jake, I was like, if you tell me, like, Lord Corrigan may have used a tweet of ours as bulletin board material. I was like, as Milo Marlo says from The Wire, that's one of them good problems. You know, that was
no, yeah, I have no. I've got Notre Dame third. They're going to be, I don't know. I think they'll probably be fourth. I think they'll probably, I'm looking at it right now. I haven't tabulated it all. I'll do that, you know, when we're done. But just kind of looking at it, glossing over, I think they'll be fourth. I think Denver might be ahead of them. I think Virginia might be ahead of them as well. But yeah, they're going to be in the top five, and they look like a. When you look at that defense, the way they played, that defense is. I thought it was going to be great, and then after the first couple games, I looked at it and I'm like, I think it might be good. Like early in that Cuse game, I was like, I think it's definitely a good defense, but I don't know if it's great to kind of. In some of those old Notre Dame defense ways, at least in this against Duke, they were great in the old Notre Dame defense way. They were fantastic. And then they didn't win, you know, a lot of faceoffs against Duke, but they've got their faceoff guys. And Entenmann is a phenomenal goalie. And offensively, look, I'm going to be up front. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I still don't know if you win at the end of the day in May. Can you get by without having, to me, an elite Dodger? And that's the thing that's going to loom for me with this team. But what they do well on offense is that they execute really well. They move the ball well. They've got good shooters. They've got a lot of guys who can play. So that's kind of one of their benefits is if there's not one guy who's so far ahead of the rest, they do have a good. They have a lot of guys who therefore can play, and they're willing to play a lot of guys, and that can give them a depth advantage in there. And that's a tough out. That's a tough out in May. They are going to be a tough out at the very least, if not going to the Final Four. And they are definitely better than we thought, you know, 2 weeks ago. So yeah, like I'm not gonna lie, the offense has looked good. It looked good against Syracuse. It looked good against Duke. It looked. Good against Virginia, great against Syracuse, and then good against Duke. has it completely swayed me that it's enough to be a national championship offense? I'm not sure. We'll see if, you know, that's the thing that keeps me up. But as far as they got a great defense, they got a great faceoff guys, they got a great goalie, and they got a good offense, that's a tough equation to beat. That is, that will make them a tough out at minimum for whoever they play in a quarterfinal. And again, if not a Final Four, maybe Memorial Day team.
You know what, Jake? That's a great way to end this. Just follow College Crosses League. Just always trust your instincts. Believe in, like, Notre Dame from preseason on, and you too will be rewarded with the arguably one of the top teams in the country, maybe number one in your poll. So, from all of us in College Cross, hope you enjoyed this. It's Jake. I'm Safe. You can follow the main account at college_cross. You'll find us on Twitter, and I'll see you soon.
Stay hydrated. Becky Lynch for president.